Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Money and Change. My name is Ira Robinson. As always, we are here with the always amazing, always fantastic, the ever wonderful Stu Scheer. Hello, Stu.
Well, Ira, you've outdone yourself again. That flattery may get you somewhere.
I don't know where, but it'll get me somewhere.
It'll get you somewhere. Yeah, that and a dollar and a cup of coffee and a plane ticket to Florida.
Exactly.
It's still cold. You know, it's 32 degrees here, and I bet you it's about 31 where you're
at. It's about that, yeah. It's pretty darn cold.
Yeah, I mean, what happened to all this warm weather we're supposed to have? You know, it was supposed to be halfway decent when I go up to the University of Findlay on Saturday. And I was trying to secure my parking place with the police so I didn't get pulled over or anything for parking in weird spots. And so anyhow, they were very gracious to give me a parking spot right outside the physical education facility. So that's a good deal.
Yeah, that works.
Yeah. And the University of Findlay is now number 13 in the country in Division II NCAA basketball. So I'm hoping for a very good game. And it usually is when I'm up there. They don't have slouchy basketball games. Either the girls, I'll call them the women, and the guys, they play some fantastic basketball. And against some fairly good Division II teams, too. Well, hey, you know, before we get going, we always have some shout-outs to do. So, you know, we got to give a big, big, big shout-out to WCET, which is FM 101.7 in Columbia, South Carolina. And if you're listening to us in Columbia, hey, go to our website. Check us out at moneyandchange.weebly.com. That's W-E-E-B-L-Y. That's moneyandchange.weebly.com. And we really appreciate FM 101.7 in Columbia, South Carolina for carrying the show. Also, a big shout out to Dr. Catherine Fell, who's the president of the University of Findlay. You can check out their website at www.findlay.edu. Trust me, it's a very good school for a lot of different programs. And I'm not saying that just because I was a graduate from there. It's a fact. Just go up and check out the campus on their website at www.findlay.edu. Also, a big shout out to Mary Frances Barnes Rodriguez. See, I got it right 2 weeks in a row. Mm-hmm. At d52creativeservices.com. And she does all kinds of graphic design, illustration. She does strategic developments and marketing plans. She's a powerhouse. She really is. Also, a big shout out to the American Wood Shop and Susie and Scott Phillips. They've been buds for a long time. I've known Scott since grade school, basically. Very nice guy, very talented woodworker, along with his wife, Susie. And they have the American Wood Shop. And, you know, they're going into season 25. That's a long time. And they do a lot of their things through Bowling Green State University and their TV station up there, WBGSU. So if you get on the public broadcasting, better known as PBS, check them out, the American Wood Shop with Scott and Susie Phillips. Also, a big shout out to Rusty Ducks Custom Pens. I was at a meeting this past week, and Rusty made one up for our lodge secretary, and it was beautiful, fantastic. And he encased it in something I believe called liquid diamond. Oh man, that pen really shined. And it was a big pat on the back to the lodge secretary for doing all of his work. You know, they really don't get paid much, hardly anything, for all the work that they do. And it was an appreciation brunch that we had for him. And the secretary was really appreciative of it. So anyhow, before we get going, you know, we always do disclaimers, and the information contained in this presented material is from the postings of news agencies on the internet and are not necessarily the views or opinions of the owners of this program. We are not responsible for and expressly disclaim all liability for damages of any kind arising out of use, reference to, or reliance on any information contained in this broadcast. The information provided is not offered as financial advice, financial planning, or for investment purposes, so you want to use this information at your own risk. Now, from the currency chart at XE.com today at 4 o'clock, the euro gained 2 cents on the U.S. dollar. It's now up to $1.24. The Great British Pound, wow, it went up to $1.41 from $1.38. Something is going on there. The dollar is losing its value. Sometimes that's good and sometimes that's bad. We might talk about that in a little bit. The Australian dollar, hey, it's up to 80 cents. Along with the Canadian dollar, it's 80 cents to the U.S. dollar. The Swiss franc, hey, it's up to $1.06. It gained 2 cents. And you'll find that the Swiss franc is a pretty stable source of money. And so, you know, for foreign currency, you want something rock solid. Probably a Swiss franc would probably be a good investment, but do your own research first before you jump into the fire. Also, the Japanese yen stayed the same at 9 tenths of a cent to the U.S. dollar. The Chinese yuan went up to 15.8 cents. The Kuwaiti dinar went up 1 penny to $3.33. The Vietnamese dong, well, the barrel got just a little bit heavier to push. It's a 22,709.38 dong to the dollar. Bitcoin, well, you know, it took a tumble. Well, last week was $11,809.41 for one Bitcoin. And now it's up to $1,293.98. So there's an increase there. But, you know, Bitcoin is volatile. You know, for several weeks, it worked its way up to $15,234 and some change. And then all of a sudden, it rapidly dropped down to $13,851.93. And it's this up and down and up and down and up and down. And then somebody has some type of a scandal and somebody takes money or they mysteriously lose the money, whatever. It's crazy. It really is. And so if you want to invest in cryptocurrencies, I'm going to say this. You want to do it at your own risk. Because one day you could be worth a lot of money and the next day you're not worth hardly anything. And the same thing goes with Ethereum. You know, last week, Ethereum was $1,087.08 for one Ethereum coin. And now it's up to $1,189 even for one coin. And again, Ethereum is cryptocurrency. It exists out in space. It's a number that's out there. You have I call it an imaginary wallet to put it in. And you have to store this stuff securely or it's downhill. I mean, scandals and stuff with Bitcoin in the past, whether it's Mt. Gox or anything else, it's scary. And
yeah,
you know,
if nothing else, it proves how volatile the market really can be. I mean, everything can literally disappear overnight.
Oh yeah, very quickly. And you have no control over it. If you're not right there watching the whole time or have alerts built into the system that you're using, you could lose a lot. Also, you know, they're finding over in foreign countries, especially in China, where some people, and we talked about it last week, you know, they were buying power stations so they could have enough power generated to run their Bitcoin miners. Doesn't that tell you there's a negative return on there somewhere? I mean, it's scary. I don't think I would have 3 or 4 million or maybe 100 million to invest into a power station just to power up all my computers trying to get Bitcoin. That seems a little weird, doesn't it?
Yeah, I don't really have that much handy.
No, not with taxes coming up. You know, I just got my property tax statement here. I don't know how it works in Indiana, but we always get a blessing from the state towards the end of January and the beginning of February, and they only give you a few weeks to pay up. And so I want to make sure that I'm covered. I just paid off all of Christmas. It was fantastic. I wrote a check for one of my credit cards and paid off Christmas. I thought, oh, this is fantastic. So, you know, I'm not in debt anymore. And I love not being in debt until taxes come around. And then you got to pay out more. But I never put that on a credit card. When do your taxes come out?
You know, I'm not sure. I think it's around March-ish, but we don't have to worry about it too much here because we rent, so it's automatically added into it.
Well, that's a good thing. when you don't rent, like me, you get the surprise.
Yeah.
And it's like, what?
I think a lot of people around here, they do. It's sort of like they add it on to their monthly mortgage so that it's just automatically added on to the monthly that they already pay. So they don't have to worry too much about it getting like hit at the end of the year or something like that.
Yeah, but I wonder how deeply in credit they are, you know?
And right, exactly.
Debt, more debt. You want to stay away from that, you know? And now that the house is paid off, I mean, yeah, there's extra money coming in, which is fantastic. Now I can basically pay bills, not worry about it, you know, and just chill out. It's like going to the Hyundai dealer for my rice burner. And I went in there and they said, well, you're going to need new brakes. Oh, $366. Okay, let's put it on plastic. I'll go ahead and pay it off. And it's paid off. It's done. I don't have to worry about constant debt problems. And I know a lot of people that have that problem. And, you know, if they live within their means and they don't go out and eat and party all the time, or they don't blow a couple $100 just to go see the Bungles play football, you know, you can save a little money now and then. And you can cut back on your internet usage or your Netflix and so forth. And you'd be surprised how that builds up over time. And you can stream videos now on your smart TVs. Of course, some of us still have dumb TVs. I've got a dumb one.
Yeah, I've got a dumb one,
too. And I've got a smart one, too. And, you know, I still use Netflix. And sometimes they have good shows, and sometimes, you know. But you pick and choose. And one of these days, hey, maybe I'll just go ahead and go streaming and drop Netflix altogether. And just save, what is it, $10 a month. Well, $10 is $10. So, you know, you have to watch that stuff. And when you're talking about spending money, you need to tighten up because there are some things coming down the pike that scare me right now. Well, you get into gold. You know, we talked a little bit about Vietnamese dong and Bitcoin. We get into gold. Now, that's something you can hold in your hand. And last week, it was $1,326.40 for an ounce of gold. It's now up to $1,348.16 an ounce. And what happens when people get worried about the economy? What do? They invest in precious metals. And, you know, I talk about it on every show. Pay down your debt, put some money aside, buy long-term emergency food storage. Be able to store water and be able to purify water too. Also have your vitamins and appropriate clothing and shelter for a situation if you have to leave or bug out. Or just you have to stay in your house and you want to make sure that you've got maybe a sleeping bag if your power goes out. You know, you might have a problem where you don't have enough money to pay your utilities. You may have to do some camping out. And I know a friend of mine, when I was at a high university, this poor guy just got his electric bill for heat. It was $1,800 for last month. The month before, it was $1,000.
Oh, man.
I just
That's
about
more than I make out. In a month.
I'll tell you what, that's what I flipped out when I got my gas bill to heat the house. It was $109. The month before that, it was only $57. And I'm like, what's going on? I've got the lowest rates I can get. You know, it gets scary, you know, but could you imagine $1,800?
Well, I'm grateful that here in Indiana, the power company wanted to increase the amount that they can charge customers by 22.5% starting next year. And thankfully, the legislature decided to not allow that to happen. But I couldn't imagine. I mean, just $1,800, that's more than I make in a month. There's no way I'd ever be able to pay that back. That's just insane.
That's right. Insane. Well, you got to stop going to the casinos.
Yeah.
And that, I'll tell you what, statistically, going to a casino, yeah, they do have winners from time to time. But basically, everybody that comes in is guaranteed to lose, except for that one statistical moment. Everybody loses. They get your money for the buffets that they have in the restaurants. And, you know, they do a lot of things to get your money. And, you know, it's kind of crazy. So I stay out of casinos, too. I had a buddy of mine. We went to the casino in Lawrenceburg, Ohio, or Indiana, rather. And just across the border from Cincinnati. And we went over and we went through and I said, look, I said, Jimmy, don't, whatever you do, don't go on the creamy side of the buffet. Don't do it. He says, oh, but this stuff smells so good. I said, don't touch it. He didn't heed my warning. Next thing you know, he gets food poisoning, and I had to wait an extra 40 minutes so I could get to my car because he decided to drive. And he would be in the restroom and come out, okay, I'm ready. Oops, no, I'm not. And he runs back in. And that was instantaneous, and you seldom have that, you know, in restaurants and stuff. But casino food, I don't know. But let's get off the nasty side of that part. But you look at, you know, gold and silver. I mean, silver, wow, last week it was $16.94. It's up to $17.30. Is it time to buy more poor man's gold, in other words, silver? Maybe. Personally, I wait till it gets down into $15 and something, and then it might tickle my fancy. But normally, I don't just jump into it. Also, you know, you want to make sure that you have enough money stored away in a safe place. And you also, if you're going to get gold and silver and platinum and palladium, you have to make sure that you have a secure way of storing it. Not in a bank, because if the banks crash, you're not getting it. You may have to wait several weeks, several months. What is it with FDIC? It's 9 years to get your money back?
Somewhere right around in there, yeah.
And it's only insured up to $250,000.
Right, exactly.
Now, we don't have $250,000, but are you going to wait 9 years? And also, you know, I've heard that the federal government can come in and say, okay, we're investigating this guy, and we're going to go into a safety deposit box, and whatever's in there is ours. And then you have to fight him in court to get it back. You know, you want to keep things stored away in safe places. But, you know, precious metals are a good hedge against inflation. It's a good hedge against bank crashes, other types of social calamities. But be smart about investing in precious metals. Now, platinum last week was $1,003.36 an ounce. It's up to $1,014.93 an ounce. And palladium went up. Boy, did it. Well, no, it didn't. It was $1,101.93. It's down to $1,097.81. It went down a little bit. And Ethereum, hey, it's up to $1,189. But again, that's cryptocurrency. I mean, a magician could probably come up with currency there. But it's scary. And, you know, if you're financially able to do it and you can store it securely, then go ahead and do it. Now, am I going to recommend a whole bunch of different people or one specific company to do precious metals? No. You can go out and research on your own and pick the best reliable one. And there are plenty of them out there, whether it's APMEX, silver.com, or kitco.com, or there are others that even advertise on the radio and TV. Whatever you do, don't buy a certificate. It's just a piece of paper. And when they say, well, we'll give you this piece of paper and we'll hold your gold for you, just remember this. If there's a collapse in the markets and the banks crash and you go to get your certificate and then go to the company and say, okay, here's my certificate. I want my gold. Well, sorry, we accidentally oversold it 100 times. We don't have it anymore. Or you go to the company and you go to buy it and it's closed, out of business. All you have is a piece of paper in your hand. Never, ever, ever buy a gold or silver or platinum or palladium certificate. Because the only thing you can do is either use it for extra TP or you could paper your walls with it. And it would be maybe a nice looking piece of paper on the wall. Something to remind you about your folly. Well, let's get into some of the information that's out there on the web. You know, Reuters came up with a thing in New Delhi, and the cryptocurrency people and investors in India are just about ready to have a cow. A holy cow. What a pun. Well, India sends tax notices to cryptocurrency investors as trading hits $3.5 billion. That's with a B. And they sent notices to tens of thousands of people dealing in cryptocurrency after a nationwide survey showed more than $3.5 billion worth of transactions have been conducted over a 17-month period. The Income Tax Department made that public. And they said a Bitcoin sign is seen in Kuta, K-U-T-A, on the resort island of Bali, Indonesia, January 18th. And, you know, they're pushing it, you know, get into it. And tech-savvy young investors, real estate players, and jewelers are among those invested in Bitcoin and other virtual currencies. And that's according to the tax officials that told Reuters about it. And there are 9 exchanges in Mumbai, Delhi, Bengaluru, and Pune, P-U-N-E. Maybe that's puny. I don't know. P-U-N-E. How would you pronounce it in Indiana?
Pune, probably.
Okay. Well, I've never been to Pune. I don't think I'll go. But governments around the world are grappling with basically how to regulate cryptocurrency trading. And they're going to talk about that at a G20 summit in Argentina in March. And the Indian government has issued repeated warnings about digital currency investments, saying these were like Ponzi schemes. And we've heard about Ponzi before. Right, Bernie? Madoff? There are a lot of Ponzi schemes. And, you know, governments want that. They want the tax off of it. And it's part of control. They want to control a money-making opportunity. And it's like the Indians are saying, we can't turn a blind eye. It would have been disastrous to wait until the final verdict was out on the legality of Bitcoin. And you know, countries are going to learn to, or try to, regulate cryptocurrencies. I believe in Russia they were banning it, only to come out with a state-issued cryptocurrency. In China, they were going to outlaw it or try to curb it. It's still going on here in the U.S. It's going on in Japan and other places. And a lot of people are basically treating the digital currency like gold. And that was according to Zeb Pay, Z-E-B-P-A-Y, and his name is Saurabh Agrawal, A-G-A-R-W-A-L. What a name. But they're treating it like gold. And remember, it can disappear. Gold doesn't necessarily disappear until you get rid of it. And just remember, if you do buy gold, you do buy silver, an ounce is fine, a tenth of an ounce is fine, a half an ounce is fine. But don't try to buy a big gold ingot, because you can't put that in your pants and walk around with it. You can't trade with it. So, you know, you have to watch out. Now, in Zero Hedge, they were talking about where will Bitcoin close for the year? And online bookies kind of have the answer. And they said if the spot price of Bitcoin wasn't volatile enough, in recent weeks, so-called cryptocurrency analysts have come out with some truly bizarre, if not ridiculous, predictions where they see the digital currency headed next. And none has been more outspoken or eager for the spotlight other than former JP Morgan equity strategist Tom Lee, who now expects the price of one Bitcoin to surge to $125,000 by 2022. I wonder what he's been smoking. Bitcoin to $125,000?
I don't expect it's ever going to get anywhere close to that myself.
But
if anybody's willing to donate one to me, I totally am willing to hold on to it until that time. Just as an experiment, you know, so make sure feedback@openeyesnetwork.com. That's my email address. You guys can hook up with me.
Oh, yes. Well, I'm not going to give out my email address. But if anybody wants to give it to me, give me a call at BR549. Oh, wait a minute. That's Hee-Haw's number. I'll make mine BR546. Well, anyhow, you know, you take a look at this and everybody's looking at different things, you know, and one guy's making a prediction from Fundstrat Global Advisors, and he's saying that Ethereum will hit $1,900 by the end of 2018, and Ethereum Classic will rise to $60, and NEO or NEO will rally to $225. And odds makers at betdsi.eu, which is, it's a European betting business, they expect Bitcoin's end of year value to be around $19,000 while Ethereum rises to $1,650. They do not anticipate Ripple being added to the Coinbase exchange this year, and they do not expect various governments to enact law regulating the crypto market. Wasn't Ripple a wine? I never heard of it as a coin.
Yeah, I think it is a wine, yeah.
Yeah, it's what was it when I was going to school at Findlay? Of course, a fine school like that, students don't drink on campus. We had Annie Greensprings, Ripple, Mad Dog 2020, if you were really desperate. They would always say, well, drink a little Mad Dog 2020 if you want to go blind. I could tell you some stories about that. I didn't ever try it. Never tried that. But I had a college roommate who did. He accidentally found a bottle at a friend's apartment. We literally had to carry him back to campus, and it took four guys to pick up my roommate. Oh, and what a deal. I mean, he was passed out, drunker than a skunk, and all he had was basically that one bottle of MD 2020, which is known as Mad Dog. I can still remember that night trying to haul his rear end from six blocks away from campus into campus and get him into the dorm room. That was a trip. But Ripple as a currency, I don't know. I don't know the value. Maybe I'll look that up and let people know what it is next week. Well, here's a funny one. I think you'll get a kick out of this one. A burrito-seeking drunk driver is busted, according to the cops. I said, Bank of America drive-thru lane was mistaken for a Taco Bell. Can you imagine that? I mean, a guy pulls up to the ATM, you know, and I like a couple of tacos. Well, this came from thesmokinggun.com, and it said in January 19th, a Florida motorist was so impaired that he mistook a Bank of America drive-up lane for a Taco Bell and sought to order a burrito from a teller, according to an arrest report. And the cops were summoned Wednesday afternoon to a Tampa-area bank in reference to a suspected impaired driver. And upon arriving at the Bank of America branch, an investigator found this Douglas Francisco, who's 28, at the wheel of a blue Hyundai, that's a rice burner, in the bank's parking lot. And a bank manager told police that the male driving this blue Hyundai passed out at the wheel while in the bank's drive-through lane. And after the employee beat on the car's window, a driver awoke and asked for a burrito. He subsequently drove away after being informed he was not at Taco Bell. Well, anyhow, during the questioning from the police, Francisco made several statements that were differing from reality. So they kind of cuffed him and stuffed him. And he was arrested after a field sobriety test. But can you imagine going into a bank's ATM drunk as a skunk and thinking it's a Taco Bell? Especially in Tampa. Maybe during spring break. Have you ever been to spring break in Florida?
No, never.
Never? I was there one time. And we were at Indian Rocks Beach, which is south of Clearwater Beach. And Indian Rocks is kind of laid back. You know, I won't say it's a bunch of old people, but there were a few. And I decided, okay, a friend of mine is over in Largo. I'll give him a call and see if he wants to do anything. Well, anyhow, he said, yeah, I'll come over. And I said, okay, that's fine. So I showed him around the apartment complex where I was at. And I said, hey, I said, you want to go up to see the kids at spring break? And he said, yeah. Well, it was only 7 miles up the beach, past Sand Key and all that, to get up to Clearwater Beach. 7 miles took us an hour to get there. Kids running across the street, zigging and zagging, and oh, tons. Now, Clearwater Beach has a residency population of probably about maybe a quarter of a million. And then when the spring breakers come in, oh my God, they're everywhere. And they're camping out everywhere. And the cops have mobile trailers where they can process them before they put them in a holding pen someplace. I mean, woo, drunk kids everywhere. As far as the eye could see. And that was the last time I was ever at spring break. And you want to talk about some drunks? Holy cow. I mean, they'd get lost and they'd come down to Indian Rocks Beach to the south. And they would come up and you'd just be sitting out there talking with friends. Hey, can you help me find my car? Well, where did you leave it? In Clearwater Beach. Why, that's 7 miles the other direction. He goes, oh, crap. And, you know, stuff like that going on. I can't imagine somebody going to an ATM and thinking it's a Taco Bell. Good grief. Well, you know, we've got a thing. We talked a little bit about the dollar losing some ground. And sometimes that's good because when you have a good solid currency, a lot of people will say, okay, it's good and solid. That's fantastic. But yet your prices for your goods and services in another country, it makes it too steep. And so when your currency devalues a little bit, then your products that you sell in other countries become cheaper because of the exchange rate, and people will then want to buy your product. And that's a good sign, but sometimes it's not. So we have to watch the economy, and we have to watch it very seriously. you know, I don't know where it's going to go. I've seen a lot of reports of different places. You know, Deutsche Bank, and we've talked about Deutsche Bank before. It's one of the largest banks in Germany, really the largest. And then TD Bank is the next largest in Germany. But the Deutsche Bank is taking a look at the U.S., and they're taking a look about what's going on with bubbles. And we've talked in the past about housing bubbles, car loan bubbles, student loan bubbles. And we know that they're going to burst. They always do. How badly they're going to burst, nobody knows. And if somebody does know, you know they're rigging the markets. Well, in Zero Hedge, there was an article that said, Deutsche, the Fed now appears powerless to stop this unprecedented bubble. And they're saying, has the Fed lost control of the market? And the question first posed by Goldman last May, you've heard of Goldman Sachs, well, has received growing prominence in recent months, culminating with none other than Bill Dudley earlier this month, who pointed out the paradox of five consecutive rate hikes resulting in record easy financial conditions in his January 2018 speech. And one of his last as New York Fed chair, in other words, the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. But if the Fed has indeed lost control of the market, that would mean that there is nothing the Fed can do until the market bubble bursts once the current melt-up finally rolls over. And that's the quandary that's being analyzed by Deutsche Bank. And they had a recent report, and they said, through their analyzing of everything, they said an unprecedented bubble emerged during the 2004-2006, back when the Fed hiked rates 425 basis points. And they warned that the current market environment is similar, in which, you know, monetary policy hiking is likely to have a limited effect in restraining risk-taking. And then Deutsche Bank lays out three scenarios that, you know, in theory could stop and maybe even reverse the current asset bubble, which are the following here. Monetary policies or communications designed to increase volatility. The second one's monetary policies designed to hike long-term interest rates, and that's scary. And the third one is regulations and supervisions to curb cryptocurrency trading. Aha, cryptocurrency again. And there were some other thoughts on those three points. And Deutsche Bank notes that former Fed Governor Jeremy Stein advocated for a monetary policy to cope with credit spreads, but little headway was made in discussing these policies. And the second thing was monetary policies designed to hike long-term interest rates include tapering quantitative easing, reducing the size of the central bank's balance sheets. Yet these policies are all predicated on inflation accelerating, which leaves option three, regulating cryptocurrency trading and initial coin offerings, ICOs, which, you know, unlike China, will take time in developed countries. So they're saying, you know, we could be in a financial crisis. So then later on, like today, on Zero Hedge, it came out and said Goldman shows what a market crash will do to the economy. The Fed was worried last week. Bank of America was worried last week. Deutsche Bank is kind of worried right now. And now Goldman is kind of saying, hey, I think we got a problem. And they said, you know, Goldman said for the simple reason for the past decade, despite all the rhetoric from central bankers, you have just one thing, reflating risk assets in general and the stock market in particular, because if you get stocks higher, everything else will eventually follow. and you call it the wealth effect and confidence pass-through channel. And they're worried about that. And if there's a market crash, what's going to happen? And they said, you know, if you consider a sharp correction where the stock prices fall 20% in the first quarter and stay flat afterwards, that's reminiscent of the 20% Black Monday crash in 1987. They're worried about that. Sharp stock market moves, you know, that worries everybody. I mean, what would you do, Ira, if you woke up in the morning and they just had on the news, whether it's in the paper or on the web or wherever, that the value of the dollar just went down 30%. And now the money you have in your bank is 30% less.
Well, I would say go figure, number one, you know, but number two, it's, you know, I don't know. For me, I don't worry so much about money. I don't know. Maybe it's just weird, but as long as I've got enough to actually cover things, I'm okay. Now, if we were if the value of our rent money was reduced by that same amount, no big deal. You know, it's just a matter of the money's still equal, technically speaking, right? If the value of everything went down by 30%, then again, everything would still be equal. But if everything was still costing the same, yeah, I'd be quite pissed off, to say the least.
Well, what would happen then if it dropped 30 to 40% and the bank said, well, didn't you read that fine agreement at the bottom of each notice we send you that we can have a bail-in and take money out of your account to keep the bank from being insolvent?
Well, that would definitely...
It got quiet there for a while, didn't it?
That would definitely tick me off, to say the least, yeah.
Oh, yeah, there'd be riots in the streets everything else, you know?
Absolutely.
And, you know, Sam's has been closing stores, and they're trying to shake up their operations. And Matthew Boyle at Bloomberg was saying that the warehouse chain will consolidate a number of merchandise roles, and the company moved to shut 63 of its own locations earlier in the month. But they're restructuring its product purchasing team, making the second big shakeup of the Walmart Stores, Inc. this month. And, you know, a spokesman from the company was saying that the warehouse club retailer will consolidate what had been six buying roles into three: merchant, senior merchant, and divisional merchandise manager. And that is going to be effective February 3rd, but there won't be a big result in loss of jobs. At least that's what they're saying. That's scary. You know, Walmart is a very big concern. It's like Amazon. You know, I just read today that there were 20 cities for Amazon for their second headquarters. And then New Jersey suddenly said, we're going to give you a lot of money if you come to New Jersey. Well, we'll see what happens. But you know, when you have all this stuff going on and you get financial bubbles getting ready to burst, and let's say they do, and let's say we have a lot of ticked off people because, gee, the market's crashed, the bank's crashed. Oh, I can't get money out of my ATM. Probably because the drunks there trying to get a burrito. But, you know, you try to get money out of the bank. The banks are closed. You can't get anything out of the ATM. You haven't prepared. You haven't listened to the show, Money and Change. You haven't gone to the moneyandchange.weebly.com website to learn how to prepare. And there you are. All alone. You've got a family to feed. There's nothing to do to get food, because you've run out. You're not going to get paid because there's no work. You can't depend on social agencies to bail you out, because eventually there won't be anything for them to bail you out with. You can't bet on the federal government to come in and take care of your needs because they're not. And if they do, it would be minimal, to say the least. So what do you do? Would a rural area be safer in a, we'll call it, should hit the fan situation, SHTF? Well, according to Tom Chatham at Project Chesapeake, it's something we have to consider. And, you know, in a situation where the national infrastructure and life-sustaining resources are suddenly cut off, population density will have a lot to do with how well you get by in the days following the crisis, especially in large cities. Food goes quickly. Water goes quickly. Look at hurricanes and natural disasters and so forth. The markets, the shelves go bare in probably less than 3 days. You can't get things stocked fast enough. I don't even think Walmart could stock the shelves that fast. So, you know, you have to worry about that. Did you store up long-term food? And I don't care if you go to a lot of different places out there, whether it's Be Prepared, the LDS store, or, you know, Thrive Foods, whatever. You have to be prepared for stuff like this. And when you go to your stores, like you go to Aldi's, you get a couple extra cans of fruit, a couple extra cans of soup. Every time you go, it's only maybe $5 more, but you take that extra $5 and you put that aside in long-term food. And you check the dates on those cans. The cans are good for a year. But actually, in reality, some may be as good as 5 years away. Well, what about meals ready to eat, or MREs, like the military eats? You can heat them, or you can eat them right out of the bag.
And they're not some too bad either.
Well, no, I've had some. I had a buddy of mine that I worked with. He went down to the local surplus store in downtown Cincinnati. And he got an MRE. Now, most of us, we went down the way to Skyline Chili, got chili to bring back up to the lunchroom because it was just down the street. And we had to get our weekly fix, you know what I mean? If you haven't had Skyline Chili, try it. It's an acquired taste, but once you get to like it, it's pretty good. But he opened up, and this is my buddy Jimmy again. He opens up this big bag of MREs, and he tried the peanut butter and jelly on crackers and all this. And he said, you know, it's not bad. It's not bad, and especially with these heaters and stuff. And he tried it, and he only paid $5 for it. And he had enough to take home and have another meal and maybe some snacks beyond that. But, you know, there's MREs out there. And, you know, the farther out from the cities you get, and how many people in Fort Wayne?
Let me see. Last I knew, there was about 350,000.
350,000. And it has the only outer belt that goes around the whole county, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you take a look at 350,000 people. The grocery stores are bare. You can't get things, and let's say an EMP happens and there's no power. Oh, you want to talk about some ticked off people.
Well, I can give you a great example, Stu. A few years ago, there was a really major ice storm that went through our town. It knocked out the power for most of the town for a few days. Some people were out for almost 2 weeks, but most people were out for about 5 days. That includes all the grocery stores, everything. They all had shutdowns happen. They didn't have generators to keep everything running for a great length of time like that. And during the process of all of this occurring, you know, everybody else, they were out of power at their houses and stuff. The hotels filled up really quickly. You know, restaurants, they couldn't cover people that were coming in because they started to run low on food. We literally ran out of food and supplies here in our area for a couple of days. It took almost 2 weeks for everything to start getting back to at least somewhat of a semblance of normalcy, and probably another month on top of that before everything got back to total normalcy. And that was just after being offline basically for about 5 days. It's been estimated by the American Trucking Association itself that if the trucking industry shut down for only a period of 24 hours, it would take almost 3 months for everything to get back to normal within the United States. That's how much of a impact we have. You know, think about it this way. Your food in general travels almost 1,200 miles on average. So if you get an apple, even if it was considered to be local apple or something like that, you know, unless you got it from the farmer themselves, you know, or the orchard themselves, that apple probably traveled almost 1,200 miles before it actually got to that produce aisle in your store. It's very sad exactly how interdependent we really are on these, you know, large scale operations that are occurring.
Well, yeah. And sometimes, you know, we get our vegetables in the wintertime from South America.
Right. Exactly. That's what I mean. Yeah.
You know, and in the wintertime down there, of course, they're having summer right now. But in the wintertime down in South America, they're buying their vegetables from us.
From us. Right. Yep.
And so it's, you know, it's a little tit for tat.
I mean, there are benefits to it, sure, but at the same time, you know, it's concerning to be that dependent on food traveling that great of a distance. It's much better to try to do things on a more local level, you know?
That's right. And if you have a crap hit in the fan situation and
you're
in a
big
city,
it's going to be local at that point.
yeah. You know, it's like, okay, what do? Bug in or bug out? Do we take our bug out bag and head for the hills? Do you have a place to go? Do you have a relative someplace and hopefully they have some food? Are you going to have people migrating from the cities out into the country? Are the people in the country are going to be able to put up with the people that are migrating from the cities? Okay. I mean, wasn't it back in the Dust Bowl times that signs were outside of towns, keep on moving, we don't want you here?
Yep, absolutely.
You know, and so people living in the country, I mean, they're a little bit more self-sufficient and they know how to grow food. Do you have a garden?
Were you asking me? I'm sorry. I thought it was a joke. Garden. Yes, we do some garden. We also have a greenhouse as well. So,
see, I don't have a greenhouse. And one of these days I want to do that. I have a raised garden for limited things. And I'm even contemplating, a friend of mine has a small farm about 4 miles away. And I was thinking about talking with them about just renting a plot, like a half acre, and growing things out there.
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, when it comes to growing food, one of the things I really recommend people look into is aquaponics. Aquaponics is a really amazing piece of technology. You're using a combination between hydroponics and aquaculture. With hydroponics, you've got the plants are growing in a liquid medium. You know, the nutrient-rich water is what feeds the plants, and the roots grow into the water from there. And then in aquaculture, you have fish being farmed, basically, you know, a farming situation for fish in large-scale ponds or aquariums and that kind of thing. And the problems with those two is that with hydroponics, the water becomes, you know, destabilized over time. The nutrients are taken up by the plants and you have to throw out the water and add new in. And with aquaculture, you have the problem of the fish pollute the water because of their poo, and they outgas ammonia from their gills and that kind of thing. So the water has to be replenished quite frequently with that. Well, with aquaponics, you're combining both of those together. As the fish outgas ammonia and their poo into the water tanks, the water then gets fed up into plant beds, which the plants then take the in the medium basically that is in the plant beds, a wild bacteria grows. that converts the ammonia into nitrates, which is used by the plants to actually grow. Then the water is dumped back into the original fish tank, and it's all a very self-sufficient enclosed ecology, basically. You're using the fish to feed the plants, and the plants clean the water that the fish then live in. So between the two, it's really great, but you can produce food extremely rapidly, and the food is, I mean, it's amazing nutrition food, because it's so number one, it's right there, you know, out of your garden, so to speak. But number two, it all can be run also on solar power, because the only thing you have to do is get the water from the fish to the plants and back. Most of that can be taken care of by gravity, but to get to the water, like from the fish tank into the plant beds, you can hook up, you know, like a pond pump, you know, like a water pond pump, to a solar panel and battery unit, and run it off of solar power. You don't have to have any kind of independent power source to keep the thing running. And I'll tell you what, again, I know somebody that has an acre worth of land. They have a huge amount of greenhouses that are set up on this acre of land. And every year they produce over 70, I think it was, if I remember right, they produce over 750 tons of food off of this 1 acre of land. It's amazing what you can do with this type of technology.
And you know, if you had a bicycle and you took the rear tire off and you put little cups on it and found a way to take and put that in that one tank and get somebody to ride the bike fast enough, you could lap up all that water, send it down a tube, and water your plants.
Exactly. Yeah, there's all different kinds
and
of things
and lose
that can
weight
be done
in the process.
Yeah, there's all kinds of things like that that can be done that you don't have to rely on an outside power source, and you're still generating a massive amount of food. Not only that, you can eat the fish, you see. So.
Well, that's true, if you like fish.
Yep.
But I'll tell you what, some fish is very good. So, you know, hey, we're getting short on time, aren't we?
I think we are, yeah.
Just a little bit. Well, hey, you know, the new Wrinkle City Gazette has been posted early. It's on the website at moneyandchange.weebly.com. And if you go there, you can check it out. But also, you need to check out two other things. And one thing is, check out Ira's books. Where are they?
You can find all my books at originalworlds.com. That's my website to get all of my books, my free stories, all that great stuff. It's all over there at that website.
And you can also go to L&M Radio Network and help donate for our show to stay on the air. I mean, I donate my time and research every week, and I've been doing this for 5 years. Hopefully, I'm trying to help some people here. And maybe I have helped some people. I know in Scott Phillips's case, he said, yeah, you saved me a couple thousand bucks. I'm like, hey, that's great, Scott. You know, so, you know, just a couple quick ones here. You know, when you're from Wrinkle City, when you're the final owner of every car you buy, or you've been hospitalized at the local hospital for a pain in the butt and they've run $50,000 worth of tests only to find you have a wedgie up your crack. You know you're from Wrinkle City when all the girls in your high school drill team are now strippers at Boobs and Beer. Or the tattoo artist in town is the wealthiest guy. Or when you have to wait for your mechanic to get out of jail to fix your transmission. Well, that's in Wrinkle City Gazette at moneyandchange.weebly.com. Back in the humor section, we've got a ton of information there, especially on preparedness. And we'll talk to you next week.
Sounds great, Stu. Thank you for everything that you do. Everybody out there, keep safe, have fun, and we will talk to you again real soon.